and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And today is the day that the second and third segment, I am always pleased to have a conversation with James Corbett. So it was previously recorded, but it was a very interesting conversation this week. And I do so enjoy James's insight. He's quite knowledgeable. Make sure you visit his website, thecorbettreport.com. And, of course, you can still support Bob Chapman. I know many of you listeners out there, you know who Bob is. And you can still support both James, and you can also support the International Forecaster. Get a complimentary copy, theinternationalforecaster.com. And, yes, also still remember to support Pastor Butch Paul. And we thank you. We do appreciate your support of Discount Gold and Silver by preparing for what we believe, ever since we became a fiat dollar system, that your dollar is getting worse and worse. You're losing your purchasing power on a daily basis. So get your gold and silver to protect you from going broke, from allowing government to control your purchasing power. If you like government to control your purchasing power, well, keep those fiat dollars. If you want to be independent, than buy gold and silver. And today we're going to talk right after the market report. I came across a transcript of a podcast that I'm going to go over with you. It just caught my attention. I thought it'd be a great way to fill up the first segment of the program today. It's been a very quiet day. You know, pretty much all the same thing over and over and over again. And we'll see if it doesn't get quiet, as we know, as President Trump has gone off on his, I believe, what, 2-week vacation. So I hope he rests. And I hope he rests his fingers, too, from tweeting. Keep those fingers rested, because you're going to need them when you come back from vacation. So we have a little pressure in gold today. It was down $3. We did have a high of 1506 earlier. Down $3 right now at 1498. Silver was up 6 cents at 1705. Platinum was down 4, 864. And palladium was up 4 at 1427. So a mixed board on the precious metals index today. The USDX was only down 0.02 at 97.53. Crude oil was stronger, up 182 at 54.36. Stock markets today, you know, they were down, you know, over, you know, big since the markets opened, you know, over triple digits. It came back, and it was kind of like gold. It was up and down all day. And right now, the Dow is closing out about 90 points, 26,267. The NASDAQ was down 80 at 7,959. The S&P was down 19, 2,918. 10-year yield, 1.73%, up 0.02. Germany was down another 1.33%. Everything else was fairly quiet. It's always interesting when there's so much going on, and it seems like the markets have been quiet. So I'm not sure what we're comparing it to, but it's just a quiet day overall in the markets. There was some financial news. There was a lot of China news. Their producer prices fell for the first time in 3 years. You know, now they're worrying about deflation. Their trade war is weakening demand for oil. But we saw oil prices rise today. The UK economy, that shrank for the first time since 2012. They're blaming Brexit. And again, President Trump calls on the Fed to make a substantial rate cut. I was going to talk a little bit about that before we go into the transcript. I better get going so I have enough time to finish. I never get a chance to finish what I'm talking about on these short segments. But President Trump, he's not letting up on his attacks on the Federal Reserve, calling for a substantial Fed rate cut to allow the dollar to fall in value against foreign currencies. In a series of tweets, he says, as your president, one would think that I would be thrilled with our very strong dollar. He is not. Well, ask his economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, what he thinks. Larry Kudlow, so they got to be butting heads here. Trump said that the Fed's high level of interest, and we've talked about this before, it's almost like the same, you know, the same speak coming from the president. He says that the high level of interest rates in comparison to other countries is keeping the dollar too strong. But look at these other countries. What are they doing? All their currencies are weaker. Their economies are weaker. They're not doing well. All their economies are based on stimulus. So I'm not sure that that's a good comparison. Other than maybe a weaker dollar is. They want inflation here in the States. They need inflation because of our debt. That it will always be the bottom line, no matter how they color it. So just always keep that in mind. We have inflation. The government needs inflation. Government wants inflation. They have it. They want it. They're going to get it, regardless of what they say or how they window dress it. So the best thing that you can have against those scenarios, against that fiat dollar, is, of course, owning gold and silver. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Now, many times you hear, we talk about bubbles. James Corbett talks about bubbles. We're always talking about the debt bubble. And I came across this transcript of a podcast by Wolf Richter, and it's titled, "Is the Everything Bubble Ripe Yet?" And it was a good read. I wanted to share it with you. I didn't share the whole transcript. Some of it, we've got a little potty mouth. And, of course, I couldn't do that on here. So I eliminated some of that. There were some comparisons with percentages and figures with some other countries. I didn't put that in there because that gets awfully confusing on the radio to go through all the numbers. But my point, what I wanted to make, is investors today and their mindset. And it's just so telling. And it starts out with him listening to a friend of his. And his friend was telling him about how comfortable he feels with his investing skills and his strategies after 2 years of studying the markets. His friend retired 2 years ago, and that's when the first time in his life he started paying attention to stocks and bonds. He felt really good about his portfolio. He thinks that there are going to be minor sell-offs in the market, but his portfolio was designed to ride this out without damage. And he was talking about his future. The future success of his portfolio was starting to impact his decision-making today about the future. That's what's dangerous. And how with this additional income from his portfolio, he could do all sorts of things. And the income from his portfolio would pay without sweat for the high cost of living in San Francisco. I hear my friends saying the same thing. They got creamed in 2008, but they're comfortable now. They know it's always going to come back. And if they have to, not buy an extra, go shopping an extra day for the grant, they'll pull back and everything will be fine. They're making their future decisions based on that their money will always be there from dividends from stocks. Now, this type of story has become, a constant theme, and it goes like this. I'm really smart, and I know what I'm doing. It will make money forever and ever, because over the past few years, I've made money, and everything I touched made money, and guess what? Now I'm a genius, and I throw some of my words in here, too, but this is coming from Wolf Richter. Now, me, do you know someone, as I mentioned, a friend? Family member who all of a sudden feel confident of the markets, and these conversations continue to pop up everywhere. Wolf Richter begins to share about when he began feeling that way, when he became the genius in his investments and his portfolio. The market taught us to do the craziest things because they made the most profits. Doubts evaporated. Just about everything made money. Crazy things made more money. And the craziest things make the most. He knew what he was doing. They were all self-anointed geniuses. And he's talking about 1999. This is when he was beginning to feel that. Do any of you remember the dot-com bubble? February 1999, the bull market was roaring, and everyone in it was that genius. And people who thought that this market was crazy, who sat it out, those people were considered pitiful morons. It was the gold bugs, just as today, we sit it out. We know where it's at. It's crazy, and that's what we're considered. Nobody wants to buy gold and protect yourself, do you? but it's the same as today. The conversations in 1999 are eerily like the conversations today. There was the same wise acknowledgement that there would be dips, so be it. They were designed, portfolios were designed to get us through them without damage. And it's the same notion that we have now mastered in the future, and that our wealth wasn't at all staked on highly risky, overinflated, iffy instruments, and that even if something untoward happened, we could get out in time. Then suddenly, and he says, the signs were all there. The signs were there for everyone to see. That the word suddenly doesn't really apply, and then the whole house of cards come tumbling down. People grappled with the loss of everything, and there was a growing sense of humility about these iffy bets that had been taken, and these folks were steeped in pain as dreams went up in smoke. We have short memories. We don't remember how it feels. We don't remember those people who lost everything. The NASDAQ in 1999, where most of the fun had been had, ended up plunging 78%. For people with leveraged positions and margin debt, the losses could be total. The S&P plunged over 50%. And after the S&P 500 had barely recovered, it was knocked down again by 55% during the financial crisis. It took a coordinated effort by the major central banks around the world to the tunes of trillions and trillions, tens of trillions of dollars of money printing and asset buying to bail out these investors. And now the same conversations are back that we had in 1999. The same self-confidence about mastering the future, about not being able to go wrong because we are just so much smarter now. And at the same time, the market is now more leveraged than ever. Corporate America, that's your stocks and bonds and loan funds, is more leveraged than ever, with even weak companies being able to pile on the debt. Back in 1999, the exuberance was largely limited to stocks and focused in particular on what were called the tech stocks. That's why they call it the dot-com bust. Now the exuberance is everywhere, in the stock market, nearly across the board, in the housing market, in the huge credit market that includes bonds of all kinds, and leveraged loans and collateralized loan obligations and mortgage-backed securities, subprime auto loan-backed securities, rent-backed securities, you name it. There's all types of other credit instruments out there. And then we just can't even forget about the derivatives market. What is everyone doing? Everyone is chasing yield. That risks don't exist. And there's a reason why it is called bubbles, why he calls it the everything bubble. Doug Nolan calls it the granddaddy of all bubbles. There's reasons why, it's good reasons why it's called these granddaddy bubble of all time. You know, the dot-com bubble, as huge and crazy and as irrational as it was, pales against the bubble that we're experiencing or that we're existing in today's world. He says there are two guiding principles now. One, nothing can go wrong. And two, there are no risks. And if those two guiding principles fail and things do go wrong and risks suddenly exist and trample on everyone's dream, then the third guiding principle kicks in. The Fed will always bail us out. It's exactly what everyone thinks. The government, the Fed, is going to bail everybody out. He goes on with his podcast, so he invites you to look at the stock markets where central banks have tried everything to book to inflate them and bail everyone out, and with strategies such as negative interest rates and massive QE. He's talking about world markets. Turns out U.S. stock indexes such as the S&P 500 are the exception rather than the rule. It's not because American corporations are so much better, far from it, but for other reasons that may no longer apply in the future. In major markets where stocks are denominated in currencies that are relatively stable against the dollar, such as the euro, the yen, Chinese renminbi, currency matters when we look at other markets. And he chose, for an example, the stock market in Venezuela. It has shot to astronomical highs simply because the currency those stocks are denominated has totally collapsed due to hyperinflation. But American companies are no better than German or Japanese companies. They are, however, very good at financial engineering, which is not beneficial long-term strategies. And the fact that the S&P 500 has continued to surge while nearly all of their markets with stable currencies have been bad is not proof that this outperformance will just continue in the same manner. This blind exuberance about stocks and just about all other asset classes in the U.S. tells me that there may not be a lot of eager buyers out there left to keep inflating every corner of this vast everything bubble. Signs are everywhere. That's what we talk about every day on this program. Those 2x4s floating through the air, ready to hit you. Central banks have not been able to alleviate those other stock markets despite their efforts. This includes the efforts by the Bank of Japan, whose huge QE program includes buying equities. In the end, ladies and gentlemen, there is no cure for a bubble other than the unwinding of the bubble. And this, as those other stock markets have shown, can take decades of downtrends where buy and hold is a losing strategy and where lucky market timing is the only thing that works, but where unlucky market timing is profoundly destructive. I don't mean to end the day on a gloom and doom, but it isn't. But it's just, it is what I hear all the time from investors. They're confident in what government and the Federal Reserve will do. They have just thrown risk to the wind. We do face another Great Depression like in the 30s, but with less government borrowing power to get the economy moving. U.S. can always just print money to get us out of debt, and our gigantic debts are as much the problem of our creditors as they are. Our debts are denominated in dollars, so the investors will have to take them, even if they're worthless. Don't let that happen to you, ladies and gentlemen, with your retirement accounts and all the money you work so hard for. Get it protected with gold and silver, and give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. It's 1-800-375-4188. And again, I'm happy to bring to you my conversation with James Corbett. We begin the segment talking about negative rates, touch on derivatives, so make sure you stay tuned. And we'll be back. I will be back. We'll be live on Monday. So until then, enjoy the program.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And as you know, James is the founder and editor of the Corbett Report. And you can always visit his website, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And don't forget that he also became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster, and of course, which was created by the economic analyst Bob Chapman, and we do so miss Bob. And you can always ask for a complimentary issue of the International Forecasters that is still going, and we appreciate James for all the hard work that he does in putting the articles in there each and every week. You do a fantastic job, and just what you do at your website is just astonishing. It's amazing. You've got such great information. And visit the International Forecasters website at theinternationalforecaster.com. So please do so, ladies and gentlemen. Please support them. And be so kind as just as you support Discount Gold and Silver. We thank you. James, I'm not quite sure where I will begin today. Since we last talked, as you know, things have become quite volatile. And, I mean, it was only a week that the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell made his decision to lower rates a quarter point. And since then, all heck has broken out, in addition to some other things. We saw gold drop to, it hovered around $1,400 for a day, and now we're at $1,500. And this is all happening in a week, in a week's time. So I'm not sure where I kind of like to have it laid out a little bit better than what I do, but let's just start with negative interest rates. $15 trillion of government bonds worldwide, 25% of the markets now trade at negative yields. This has tripled since just last year. This is a record high. Even in Germany, the 30-year government bond went negative for the first time. Debt in Europe and Japan, it's been a zero or negative interest rates for a very long time. There's a lot of talk that the U.S. Treasuries, negative yield. Can you share with the listeners, where does this all lead? How does it and I think what people miss most is how this all truly affects them and their retirement accounts, their pension accounts. So where does this all lead? Is this something that we should care about?
Yes, it is, and I will defer to Charles Hugh Smith on this one. People might know out there that he runs the Of Two Minds blog, and he has been writing about this recently, specifically in a post called Nothing is Guaranteed that I think is worth quoting from, because he makes some good points. He says, the American lifestyle and economy depend on a vast number of implicit guarantees, systemic forms of entitlement that we implicitly feel are our birthright. Chief among these implicit entitlements is the Federal Reserve can always save the day. The Fed has the tools to escape either an inflationary spiral or a deflationary collapse. But there are no guarantees this is actually true. And he goes on to talk about some of the ways that the Fed can save the economy, namely the Fed's fix to deflationary defaults is equally destructive. Bailing out too-big-to-fail lenders will spark a political revolt that could topple the Fed itself, as the populace has finally connected the dots between the Fed bailing out the banks and financiers and the astounding rise in income and wealth inequality. And he says, other than the phantom wealth of real estate and stock bubbles, the vast majority of the wealth generated by the Fed's actions of the past 20 years has flowed to the top 0.1%. And then he also makes the point, the Fed's other trick to halt a deflationary collapse is negative interest rates, in effect taxing savers and those holding cash and rewarding those who borrow. Negative interest rates destroy every institution that depends on relatively low-risk interest income via bonds, pension funds, insurance companies, etc. And that is, I think, where we start seeing where the rubber meets the road for the average person who thinks, well, how does this affect me? I don't know. It all seems up in the sky. No, I mean, assuming that you have, that you're involved in a pension fund, or that you interact with insurance companies, you are involved in the economy in some way, and you're in it for the long haul. You're thinking about retirement. You're thinking about future savings. This will affect you, and largely in a negative way. Unless you happen to be in the position of borrowing and borrowing massively in order to reap the dividends of negative interest, which of course is the exact opposite of everything that you've ever thought of with regards to interest. This is Twilight Zone that at least is being put on the table, and as we've seen in Japan and as you say in Germany and other places, is already being tested. They're dipping their toes into that water. That's the kind of economic inversion of reality that would have literally been unthinkable a couple of decades ago. If you had said negative interest rates, people would have laughed in your face. Those self-same people are now touting them as the savior to this problem that the Fed itself has created by blowing up the bubble and then watching it collapse in 2007, 2008, and bailing out the banks so that they could reinflate the bubble with useless, as Charles Hugh Smith points out, useless wealth, quote-unquote, of real estate and stock bubbles that themselves are destined to pop at some point. This is a very precarious state, and one of the really alarming things of the past week is that it has proven the point that a very likely scenario for a future stock market crash would be when and if the Fed's rate cuts suddenly prove to be useless. They don't really have the intended effect of propping the markets up again. Well, that seems to be what we're seeing right now, with certainly a lot of volatility and some large downward action this week, even despite the Fed rate cut. The Fed rate cuts are now already priced in. So what are they going to do? Their main mechanism for propping up this bubble is fast drawing to a close. That should be worrying for everyone.
How do these negative rates affect derivatives?
That's a good question. I think that's above my pay grade. But, I mean, as people know, derivatives are, of course, essentially bets on the upward or downward movement of other assets, other underlying assets. And so it depends on what types of derivatives we're talking about and what assets they're based in. But certainly, if you have rate cuts or even negative interest rates in an inflationary environment where you're going to start seeing the potential popping of real estate bubbles, for example, which of course, let's remember, this is what brought about the Lehman collapse and the ensuing years of worry that was papered over by the Fed almost quite literally by putting trillions of dollars on their books. That's the kind of thing that could blow up the derivatives market. And that was, in fact, one of the major concerns when they saw what was happening with Lehman. One of the major concerns was, oh, how is this going to affect, for example, AIG and all these others who were tied up in collaborative debt obligations and other types of fancy financial instruments? How are they going to blow up? Who's going to be on the other side? Who's going to be left holding the bag of these derivative bets, essentially, on the economy that just went up in smoke? And it ended up being the Fed basically papering that over. But that's... when you look at the actual derivative, well, for one thing, I mean, it's important to point out we don't know how much supposed nominal wealth actually exists out there in derivative land because there's no body that's keeping track of it. But it has been estimated up to $250 billion of quote-unquote wealth, which of course is laughable because there isn't $250 billion in the global economy. But still, as much as $250 billion of estimated potential wealth, quote-unquote, is in the derivative markets, if that truly went down, if there was truly a black hole that was sucking all of that in, that would be the end of entire institutions, entire banks, the banking system as we know it. That would be the type of doomsday apocalypse, which is why I imagine they probably will not allow that to happen, as they did not allow it to happen in 2008. But the only way to not allow it to happen would be massive bailouts, even beyond what we saw in the 2008-2009 crisis. And as Charles Hugh Smith notes, I think he notes quite accurately, the people, I don't think, will stand by idly while another massive bailout takes place, because they have, in his words, finally connected the dots between the Fed bailing out the banks and financiers and the astounding rise in income and wealth inequality, which I think is quite palpable at this point.
I don't know. I mean, I could argue the point that people will allow government or the Federal Reserve or whoever you want to say do whatever they need to do if they see their funds, if they see their pensions, they're disappearing. They might not support it, but they're not going to stop it. My question is, if the Fed runs out of steam, they're not going to be able to do anything to save the economy anyway.
True.
They won't be able to bail them out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, it's a confidence game, and at the point that people lose confidence, the game is over, which is a scary proposition for the people who are trying to manipulate our reality, because, again, that's the fundamental bubble. It's essentially a thought bubble that can be pricked at any moment by people simply realizing that the man behind the curtains really doesn't have any magical wand that he's going to use to save the economy. It's all just paper promises, and when the Pied Piper comes looking for payment on those paper promises, well, who's going to pay them? Well, it's going to end up being you and me, and Main Street is going to be asked to bail out Wall Street again. Now, keep in mind, I mean, I know a decade in current years feels like 100 years, maybe 1,000 years, but it was a decade ago that in the wake of those bailouts and the massive boondoggle that took place on the back of Lehman and all that, was the birth of dueling movements that I think were essentially coming from the same place, namely the Tea Party movement and the Occupy movement. I think they were both coming from the same place, which was looking at that utter boondoggle of the banks and the banksters and the bank's cronies being bailed out at the expense of the average taxpayer, did create mass uprising, which manifested in populist movements that, of course, got splintered off and got taken over by establishment political party hacks and became left and right and all of that nonsense. But I think both movements really came from the same place, which was an understanding that fundamentally it's us versus them. And that was expressed in, you know, the 99% and other kind of catchphrases like that. And I think that is the roots of the populist nationalist politics that we're seeing right now, or at least one of the important roots through which the last few years of politics, I think, has to be read. I think we have to understand it came from that. And so I think we are in a fundamentally different place than we were back in 2008. And I'm not sure the public would just sit by idly while this takes place. Now, what would they do about it, and what could they do about it, is perhaps another issue altogether, and perhaps that depends on things like the FBI coming out and saying any conspiracy theorists who might talk about, you know, banksters trying to create a world government, well, they're clearly domestic terrorists and we need to crack down on them. This is where stuff gets real. This is where things start to happen, potentially, again, if we go to that place of bailing out the banks once again at the expense of the taxpayer. That really does start to draw battle lines that I don't think anyone really wants to see that battle take place, at least not in terms of the carnage that that kind of thing could bring.
We're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the program, but, you know, to one degree, yes, there's so much anger and violence in this country right now. I mean, we see it. They have divided us. It used to be us against them. Now it's us against us. We see this, the social unrest that is beginning to develop. People, it seems, are angry. I don't think they're quite sure at what. They're angry at what they're told to be angry at. They're reacting. I guess maybe it's where there's an action, there's a reaction, or to some degree. So, yeah, it is a lot different. And I'll tell you what, James, I never thought in my young 39 years, chuckle, chuckle, that I'd be talking about what is reality and what isn't, and that the illusions have been created to, it truly is a twilight-type zone circus that we are living through. And it's amazing. And that's why it's so hard for people to really grasp what's truly going on.
Yes.
And what is being done to them.
An important part of that is our deracination, to use a big word. We're becoming unrooted from even recent historical events. And I just had cause to reflect on this earlier. I was recording my New World Next Week news program that I record with James Evan Pilato every week. We were just reflecting on this, that just 10 or 15 years ago, one of the major terror hysteria fears at that time was Al-Qaeda was going to unleash a wave of mass shootings at malls. That was going to be the next stage of the attack on America. And people were bracing for that. And that was, I remember that type of talk being in the air 15 years ago. But 15 years ago seems like forever ago. And now we're seeing these types of mass shooting events, and to get to the point where it is generating hysteria, and you're seeing stampedes of people trying to run away from backfiring motorbikes in Times Square that and causing, you know, injuries and even, I believe, some deaths. People are on their edge about this, and it seems to me to relate quite back to what we were just talking about a decade and a half ago, but it really does seem like a different era of human history at this point. And I think a part of that is not just the 24/7, but the we need a new term for it, the 60-minute, 60-second, down-to-the-second, new, never-ending scrolling news feed that keeps us constantly, constantly thinking and focusing on the now and never getting to connect it back to events, say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, let alone events 100 years ago, like the foundation of the Federal Reserve.
So, you know, because we have this news feed, like you just explained, that keeps our tensions, that keeps our emotions, that keep, we're all jacked up 24/7. So we react.
And also another part of that is what feeds into what you were saying there. You're reflecting on how what might have been some sort of movement that brought us together in the wake of the bailouts, i.e. everyone was outraged at the Fed's bailing out the banks, has been completely and utterly dismantled in terms of splintering in identity groups versus other identity groups and left versus right, and every way that group that could come together has been divided up. And I think part of that is because, again, we can't really connect what's happening today to what happened 10 years ago, let alone, you know, 100 years ago, and that is keeping us from understanding the nature of the issue and coming together on these issues.
Is this all by design?
There are many different ways that we can look at the various blueprints that have been floated by would-be social engineers over the past century or two. But in terms of, I mean, can you find the smoking gun blueprint that they wanted to do it precisely this? Probably not. But if you were a would-be ruler of society and you did want to benefit society to your benefit and the benefit of your bankster buddies, could you think of a better way to engineer society than what we are, the position we are in right now? I mean, even if it wasn't by design, it is the perfect place for they, them, those to be in.
Monday, the U.S. declared China a currency manipulator. Today's, again, it seems like it was weeks ago. It was days ago. China is a currency manipulator, long building this trade tensions between the world's two largest economies. And so, currency wars. Where do we go from here? Waging a currency war could come at a big cost. And I'm just going to let you think about that through the break. And we'll touch on this when we come back. Please stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm Melody Cedars-Ruman. Thank you for joining us.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with our good friend James Corbett heading into the break. Yes, I was trying to get to the topic of currency wars between the United States and our country, our president, and China, I should say. And but are we the only ones involved in a currency war, James? Or are we in a currency war? Are we headed to one?
Well, I think we have been in one for some time. It's just to what extent is that openly acknowledged? And placing China on the currency manipulator list is an extremely important step towards acknowledging that. I mean, there's just... This is kind of the bigger macro game of what's going on, and I think this is an incredibly important step. Again, not necessarily because it is in and of itself the defining moment of anything, but that it is at least a recognition that there is a currency war that's going on and that the U.S. is involved in it, not only with China, but with any number of states around the world. And I think ultimately, we have seen this before, this type of race to the bottom, this kind of beggar thy neighbor policy. We have seen people, when nations start warring about devaluating their currency and, oh, you're undercutting us. And unfortunately, the historical example I'm thinking about was the 1930s, where, of course, this was happening at that time. And that was a contributing factor towards, obviously not the single factor, but a contributing factor towards the ultimate outbreak of war in Europe and ultimately the World War. So that, I mean, this is not light stuff. It is not to be taken lightly. And I certainly don't take it lightly. I think that this represents a big escalation, perhaps one of the most important escalations in this China-U.S. trade war that's taken place in some time.
Well, you know, there's a lot of discussions about this trade war. You know, basically, President Trump, President Xi, they all know the election is next year, and an agreement will be done next year. That this is all a political...
Well, actually, I mean, it's interesting to bring up that perspective, because I think that's where the U.S.-China dichotomy really happens, because we do have Trump, who is looking to be reelected next year and who will be out in 2024, so anything that happens after that point, it's not on his watch. What does he care politically? Whereas you have Xi on the other side, who is self-appointed president dictator for life at this point. He has no mandates. He's not seeking re-election. There's no way he's going to be, well, I mean, he may be physically coup ousted, but other than that, he's not watching himself politically. So I think, once again, this represents the sort of the difference in terms of time investment on either side. The U.S. is looking for some sort of resolution relatively quickly. China, it redounds to their benefit to drag this on as long as possible, because eventually they can promise something. Oh yeah, we'll get to that in 2025. Trump will handshake on that because good enough, and then they'll never have to deliver on it. I think that really represents the fundamental dichotomy in terms of trade bargaining relations here.
Very interesting. Your most recent Propaganda Watch podcast is called Conspiracy Theorists or Domestic Terrorists. We mentioned this in the first segment of the program, and you point out that the term conspiracy theory was first weaponized by the CIA a half a century ago. And you talk about a recent Yahoo.com article reporting that the FBI, for the first time, has identified fringe conspiracy theories as a domestic terrorist threat. Well, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there, James. I'm probably one of them. So give us your insights on this bizarre development.
Yes. Well, for people who don't know about the history of the conspiracy theory term, I have talked about it a number of times, but it does... I mean, I won't say the term itself sources back, but the weaponization of the term sources back to a CIA document, I believe, from 1967, and I won't have the exact number of that document off the top of my head. I believe it's 1095-360, but, you know, for all the amount that I talk about it, you'd think I would have that memorized by now. Anyway, you can look in my archives for more about that. Specifically, I did an episode of my podcast called The C Word about conspiracy theory. But essentially, in the wake of the Warren Commission findings being released and various people casting doubt on the official findings of the Warren Commission, obviously looking into the assassination of JFK, the CIA was advising its agents and operatives within the U.S. media and elsewhere to denigrate the conspiracy theories that were being propounded at that time about assassinations, about JFK, and basically to say that there's no new information that's come to light that would falsify the Warren Commission, and so we should trust that these people did their job, blah, blah, blah. But the key part of that was conspiracy theory, conspiracy theorists, and basically marginalizing anyone who had questions about official government pronouncements in that way. And I think from that point, I think it's demonstrable that that term, conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist, entered the public lexicon in a large way and became that sort of term that we think of today, the pejorative term, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. That seems to be all that you need to say in order to immediately disqualify whatever that person is saying, no matter how much evidence they have for their conspiracy theory. So in that context, it was perhaps inevitable, but nonetheless disheartening, to see the FBI release this document, or not release, it was obtained by Yahoo News, whatever that means, last week, and they did write about this and posted the document up. It's an intelligence bulletin that was posted by the FBI Phoenix Field Office, I believe in March of this year. Anyway, earlier this year, they penned this document and released it, and Yahoo News obtained it and posted it, and so now you can go and read it online, and I hope people will, if they're interested, will take a look at that video. It's quite an in-depth video where I do go through and specifically read the document and the important highlight important passages from it. But long story short, essentially the FBI is now saying, well, conspiracy theorists may be motivated by their, you know, crazy theories to do violent acts, to commit violent acts, illegal acts, and therefore, and actually the therefore is left largely hanging at this point. I mean, it's kind of like a be on the lookout for conspiracy theorists, but as they even note in the document itself, well, the FBI is prohibited legally from actually starting investigations on people exercising First Amendment constitutionally protected free speech. So you can't really actually open investigations or start profiling people or start harassing or targeting people simply because they propound conspiracy theories, whatever that means. And the FBI document does give some examples of what they're talking about, like belief in a new world order that's seeking to form a global government, or belief that the UN is working against American interests, or belief in false flag terrorist attacks being used to prod the population in one direction or another, i.e. everything that I talk about at the Corporate Report on a regular basis. So I suppose I would be the poster child for this this new document that comes out, which is scary, obviously, in a sense. I mean, to some extent, we've already known, I think, for some time that the government targets its opponents and enemies, or what it sees as enemies, i.e. anyone who doesn't buy the propaganda wholesale. But now they are outright, black and white, here it is, they are saying, essentially, the conspiracy theorists are the enemies. But don't worry, I mean, the FBI isn't legally allowed to investigate anyone for legally, constitutionally protected speech. So I don't know what they say the point of this intelligence bulletin is. But as I say, I think we could all see that it was heading in this direction, because it is that old adage about first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. We have definitely moved past the laugh at you. I mean, now you can't simply dismiss vast sections of the population with that term conspiracy theorist, because everybody holds conspiracy theories of some form or other at this point, because the government explanations of so many events have become laughable. So now they are, quote-unquote, going to the fight you part of that phrase, which I don't want, and I don't know many people who actually want to see this become some sort of physical violent altercation, because if it does, and if and when it does, the state wins that every single time. They have the forces. They are prepared for this. They have been preparing for this. They have released document after document, and we've shown it over the years that they are preparing for large-scale domestic unrest. So they are going to win a physical violent altercation, which is why I think they want to provoke one. But there's my conspiracy theory for the day. I, on the other hand, propound such things as I articulated in an interview that I, or sorry, a video that I recorded as the voting was taking place for the 2016 selection there in the United States. I recorded a video called Only Love Can Defeat the New World Order, and that is still fundamentally my position on this. I do not advocate violence. I'm not a violent person, and none of the conspiracy theorists I know are. But having said that, I'm sure there are genuinely crazy people who will go out and commit violent acts because of whatever, because of anything. Criminally insane people will use anything, and a couple of things I point out in that video that I did, well, like Charles Manson supposedly being motivated by his supposed belief that the Beatles were the Four Horsemen telling him to start a race war or whatever. I mean, delusional people have delusional ideas. I think there's a lot more to be said about the Manson murders and all of that sort of stuff, but even just taking it at face value, what does that mean? Does that mean anyone who's a Beatles fan is potentially dangerous, potentially harmful, potentially criminal? Well, I guess, yes, literally. I guess, yeah, potentially. But how big is that potential, and can you quantify that, and what does that mean, and what should we do? Should we ban the Beatles because someone went insane and started killing people? Well, no, that seems like not the right thing to do. So what do we do if some crazy conspiracy theorist goes out there and commits a violent act? And then the other side of this, to even put the tinfoil hat on even more tightly, of course, well, wouldn't it be in the benefit of people who want to crack down on dissent to stage or otherwise manipulate some event to happen and be able to blame it on conspiracy theorists, i.e. a false flag to be blamed on conspiracy theorists? And I sort of made that observation when this document first came out about 6 days ago, and lo and behold, now we have mass shooters who were posting their treatises on 8chan and other horrible places on
did
the
you
web.
Read, did now, you read that one guy's manifesto?
I have not read it myself, no, but I can certainly imagine the types of things that will be in there. But my mind immediately wanders to the questions of how we know the authorship of this document, and even if everything is as stated and everything is at surface level, to what extent the ramblings of a crazy person should be the driving force of our political conversation?
No doubt. The ramblings of a critical of a mental person. However, I read part of it and it got creepy, and then I couldn't do it anymore. But the very beginning of it, James, he talked about, yes, it was, you know, racist in the beginning and so forth and whatnot, but it was a lot of what you hear on radio today when we talk about the multinational corporations, when we talk about how the technology and the robots are replacing humans and the jobs, and government is not taking care of this and not addressing these issues. Those would be conspiracy theorist thoughts. It's talked about on the radio. So is this the beginnings of what you're stating as a conspiracy theorist false flag? Could it be?
It certainly looks like it could go that way. And the interesting part to note about this is what things are brought up from these shooters or alleged shooters. I mean, we don't even know the details of the investigation of these things. But at any rate, what details are brought up and what are suppressed? And what things are pointed to, and then what is trumpeted in the media? I mean, several years ago there was a shooting event at a Discovery Channel or something along those lines. I don't have the details in front of me, but it turned out that the shooter was motivated by his belief that, well, we're destroying the environment and we're overpopulated and blah blah blah, so he needs to go out and shoot some people, I guess. That was the motivation, but of course, when that was revealed, can you imagine that was trumpeted? Oh, here's the new domestic extremist threat. It's people who are environmentalists. No, of course, that wasn't the way that the mainstream media suppressed that story. But, of course, whenever there's some sort of politically expedient way to blame this on a portion of the population that the certainly the media is fighting with, then they'll do so. And it could go either way in an environment like this. For example, now apparently there are reports coming in and pictures being posted of death camps for Trump supporters now flyers being posted around New York City. Now, suppose that motivates someone to go out and shoot someone wearing a MAGA hat. I mean, again, what kind of reaction is that going to cause? And will that further amplify things? And does this become a self-generating thing? To a certain extent, can these types of events be whipped up or engineered in some way that then cause a reaction that is not engineered, or at least not pre-planned? And that's a possibility as well. There are many possibilities for the way this plays out. Unfortunately, one of the smallest possibilities is that this all just goes away, that this all just gets calm down and things go back to as usual, quote unquote, because the nature of these types of events, and especially the way they are reported, is to actually amplify them and to create the copycat effect, where more people will start to actually manifest these types of events, whether they were staged or engineered in the first place. The reactionary events or the copycat events can be very real. And that's another aspect to this, the way the media plays into these situations, one that has been pointed out for decades now, glorification of the Columbine shooters and other things like that. Unfortunately, that aspect of this still continues to this day, and we still get to hear about the name and of these supposed shooters within minutes of these things happening, and they get a type of fame that is extremely dangerous, because again, this creates shooters, and the media knows this. There have been scientific studies about this. No one who works in media is unaware of the fact that they are actually creating more events when they cover them in this fashion.
What a world we live in today, James. So much violence, so much hate, and it's just going to continue to... I don't see an improvement until, you know, some drastic things begin to happen. And that's a topic for another day, because we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you visit James's website, thecorbettreport.com, and, of course, theinternationalforecaster.com. We'll talk to you in another couple of weeks, James. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back later. Be safe, good night, and God bless.
Have a plan.